As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Hey folks, welcome into On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I'm Brett Taylor, joined by Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. We're here to talk Cubs, you know, things done and things undone, things said and unsaid. Very dramatic episode of On to Waveland. Who got the rose, who didn't get a rose? So obviously, we are recording this, it's Friday after the deadline, so it's a few days after the trade deadline, and I gotta tell you, when I was thinking about our recording schedule and looking ahead to the deadline, my brain wasn't there when the deadline itself was happening, because you're so caught up in the moment, but when I was thinking in advance, I was like, oh man, it's kind of a bummer that we're not going to be recording until, so, you know, we're recording right before the deadline, and then kind of after it by a bit. We won't really, you know, things will be sort of stale by the time we're digging into it. But the way it actually played out, I'm kind of glad we do have distance from it, because I think while I had useful thoughts to share the day of the deadline and then the day after, I think I, speaking only for myself, I'm in a much better place of like sort of comprehensive understanding about what happened, what didn't, why, and all that kind of stuff with some more distance. So I think, again, speaking only for myself, I feel much more equipped to speak thoughtfully about the deadline than I might have been in the immediate moment, which I think speaks to the emotion of that day that actually extended back to the week before and what animated the emotion in the first place that we saw at Wrigley Field with Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ sort of saying their farewells, because there was an expectation by everybody that a trade, at least for Wilson Contreras, was going to happen. And so, you know, it almost was a bookend to it that you had hugs that he was staying. So that's the big news in the Cubs world this week. And, you know, I hate to set it up so generically for you guys, but, you know, let's just talk a bit about what it means that trade didn't happen, why it didn't happen, and then what that yields going forward.
Yeah, before we talk about the actual fallout, I think it's too bad Jed Hoyer has no access to the media or anybody to pour cold water on all these rumors that we started on our own. It's all our fault that Wilson Contreras was sure he was going to be traded. And if only Jed Hoyer had the ability to say, you know what, guys, maybe don't go crazy with the rumors. Maybe he won't be traded, or said anything like that to calm us all down.
Well, can I ask,
it's too bad.
Well, what would be the downside of that? Like, I did try to think, you know, instinctively, I'm like, well, you know, you don't say anything. You just keep it mum, and maybe you say something in-house, like, hey, here's a heads up that this might not happen. That's kind of a separate issue. But like publicly, I do try to think, like, what is the downside of the Cubs putting out a message sort of exactly like you said? That's just, hey, just remember, these things don't always happen.
I'm just giving him a hard time, right? I'm just messing around because I think it's silly to say, like, this is the media's fault. Like, the media built it up. But I'm not sure what the downside is to that, right? They didn't say much before last deadline, and I think everyone was kind of taken aback that they did trade all three, right? So, yeah, I guess it was the logical conclusion, but Jed Hoyer's own words after last deadline kind of made it seem like this was the obvious thing to do. And it's not like he wasn't trying his damnedest to move those guys, right? Like, the only reason it...
Well, you put it very well in your question to him after the deadline passed, which was, hey, wasn't this, you know, a missed opportunity, right? Because what he said, don't waste a crisis, and wasn't this a missed opportunity? So let's focus on that part for a moment, because then I'll move to Mooney. You also asked, this isn't just because we're podcast buddies here, guys. I did think you guys asked the two questions that were foremost in my mind. So we'll get to yours in a moment, Mooney, because it's a pretty good follow on this. But for yours, Sahadev, I know the answer to this. I know what Jed said, but maybe not everybody listening does. What was the answer to, didn't you waste this opportunity?
Yeah, his basic answer, which he paused and had to think about, because I think he wanted to use his words carefully there, but basically saying, you know, he didn't get the offer that was compelled him to make that move, right? I've talked to you know, team president or heads of baseball ops before, and a lot of them feel you don't just because it's the obvious thing to move a guy, like, it's the right move to move Wilson Contreras at the deadline, right? Forget what happened in the past. Same thing, we've talked about it for last deadline. It would have been the right move, but you don't just move him if you don't get the value that you're looking for. I get that concept, right? You have to figure out what's the value, what can it do to a clubhouse, what can it do to your reputation as an executive, all those different things that may not, fans may not factor, take into account, or even us may not take into account. Essentially, he just didn't get the offer. The market wasn't what they expected it to be or hoped it to be. Teams weren't being bold like AJ Preller normally is. I think I'd like to know more. I over the coming weeks, I think we will know more. But the bottom line is, I think there's a chance that they may not have read or played the market perfectly like they played it. It all fell into place last year. It just didn't this year. I think Juan Soto is a big reason for that. AJ Preller is one of those front office execs, the rare ones that isn't afraid to look foolish because he gave up some prospect to win now. If Juan Soto wasn't available, maybe a big deal would have come into place with the Padres, or maybe they could have played the Padres against other teams. I think once the Padres fell out, other teams also felt like, well, I'm not meeting that price. There's no reason to. You're going to buckle, not me. And neither side budged, and it ended up how it did, right? I think the Mets probably needed players like that the Cubs have to really go in on a season like this, when you have Max Scherzer, who's getting older, when you have Jacob deGrom, who's opting out in all likelihood. You want to maximize this season. So it's a little perplexing on their end, but obviously nobody was willing to pay the price. And you know, I think there's all sorts of factors there, but I think the biggest one is the Padres and Preller.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the blame the media angle, because I was kind of stunned that came out, because, you know, Jed and Carter rarely travel with the major league club on the road. They're rarely around during batting practice. They did not really keep Wilson in the loop on this. I mean, Wilson is a very sharp observer of the game and business of baseball. And for months, he was expecting this. And I guess I do give Jed credit for not spinning this as like, this was our plan all along. They do not plan to build around him. I guess an outcome of this is that they can leverage his free agency and, you know, get a draft pick. But even that, is not as valuable as having a guy right now. I mean, information is king, and wouldn't you rather be making that decision off a guy who's been in professional baseball for a couple of years versus an educated guess in 2023 on some high school kid or a college pitcher who's coming off Tommy John? We saw Caleb Killian last year coming over from the Chris Bryant trade, excelling in the Arizona Fall League, spending time around this really unique program they had for prospects for that lasts the entire length of the offseason. Killian, I don't think, was there the entire time because of his innings workload. But if the Cubs are so great at player development, have all these, you know, shiny new toys and things like that, you'd want that guy right now versus waiting to sign him almost exactly a year later, this theoretical draft pick.
Well, to add to that, here's a concern that I may not have had before the deadline, but certainly the way it played out, I just think people are not being realistic if they don't raise this as a concern. That draft pick is not guaranteed. It is only available to the Cubs if they make the qualifying offer, if Wilson rejects the qualifying offer, and then if he signs a free agent contract thereafter with a team that knows it is going to lose some draft pick volume for signing him. And if the interest in him at the deadline was sufficiently tepid that the Cubs couldn't even get, you know, half of what they got last year for their rentals, because I think they would have taken that deal. That's just my opinion. But if they couldn't even get that, that signals a market that was not bluffing when the word was circulating about the concerns about him as a catcher. That tells me that's very legitimate. Now, it's a little bit different in the middle of the season than in the offseason. Get that. Right. Totally grant that. But, I mean, we've seen catchers traded in season. And even if it depresses the value a little bit, there would have been an acceptable offer if the interest was as high as we thought. And so then you look ahead and you're like, isn't there a chance that if the Cubs make that qualifying offer, now this is predicated on health the rest of the way, typical performance the rest of the way, et cetera, et cetera. If the Cubs make that qualifying offer, you know, isn't there a chance that in that intervening 7 days that Contreras and his agent read the market and they're like, man, you're at risk of being one of those guys who gets crushed by the qualifying offer? Because didn't we just learn last offseason that the Cubs valued, remember when we were talking about this, and I don't know, it might have been one of you guys that reported it. It might have been you, Mooney, that the Cubs valued the loss of their second round pick and the pool money, right, and the IFA money at about $20 million. Now, imagine if like market rate on Wilson Contreras is $60 million guarantee, you know, little more or around the Yasmani Grandal contract. If he just gets hit with $20 million ding, I mean, I don't know, guys. There's a chance that he and his agent look at the market and say, maybe accepting that qualifying offer is our best move. So I did not, I'm not saying I'm dismissive of the whole thing about like, well, the qualifying offer created a floor for that we needed to exceed in trade. I think there might have to be a little more creativity on the part of the Cubs and maybe Wilson Contreras' camp to figure out what actually is the best path forward now. I think things changed a lot.
I completely agree with what you said there. I think there's a segment of Cub fans that understandably love Wilson Contreras and refuse to accept that he's a flawed catcher. And the way the game is going, you don't spend $25 million a year on a 30-year-old catcher that's not elite defensively. You may not even do that with one that's elite defensively, because it's just, it's a lot of money to invest in that position. Are teams straying away from offense upside catchers? No, not if you're on a rookie deal. It's great to draft a guy like that. It's great to develop a guy like that. It's great to have a guy like that in your system. But very few of the best teams in baseball are paying that. And go look at the ones that are paid. JT Realmuto, Yasmani Grandal, Sal Perez. How are they doing offensively? And how's the wear and tear affecting their defense? So it's not, it's just, As much as Wilson Contreras may be valued offensively, he's not the direction the game is going for catching defensively. Now, if you're talking about a one-year deal for whatever that is at the qualifying offer, and he ends up a Cub next year, that he ends up taking that, is that a bad scenario, really, for the Cubs if you're hoping for them to win in 2023? I mean, yes, we're seeing that he wasn't valued at the deadline. That's not ideal for the Cubs. He wasn't valued at least how they valued him, what they wanted in return, right? And that wasn't ideal for what they're trying to do. But if he's going to be DH, first base maybe, and an occasional catcher for them next year on a one-year deal, I don't think that's a worst-case scenario for them.
Well, you just hit it. You just hit it right there. It's how he would be used now.
Right.
Now, knowing what we know and thinking about, well, if it's his presence and his bat, if those are the things that the Cubs love so much, well, if he comes back, then use those and do what you want right behind the plate otherwise.
100%. And I think that's what they need to do. They need to, if they can, obviously, if they extend the qualifying offer, those 7 days will be key, right? There needs to be some talk about, hey, if you accept this, this is the role that we want you to take on. This is, you know, you're not going to be catching the, you know, this many innings or be our main catcher, and we're going to maybe pursue another catcher. So you'd basically be our third option, and maybe you'd catch every fifth day, whatever it is. I don't know what their plans are. There's a lot to play out here. I'm just saying that it's clear that he's not a great defensive catcher. So to just put him in that role and say, pay the guy and give him 5 years because he's a great offensive catcher, it's just not how the game works anymore. That's not to say he's not a great offensive player and wouldn't be valuable to this team if given a certain role.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
I do think it's funny how sometimes teams, you know, the Cubs among them, try to talk themselves into these long shot, has been, maybe prospect, take a flyer guys. And then when you have something in hand like Wilson, who, and we've all talked about this before, and particularly at this deadline, that Wilson is not an elite framer or maybe a top 1% game caller. And we've all seen he's an emotional guy who voices his opinions, and maybe that will occasionally rub some people the wrong way. But he's a really hard worker behind the scenes. He cares. He gives maximum effort every single day. You see him and a player like Christopher Morel, how he has helped him, you know, exhale, take a deep breath, take in the moment, and perform. And I think sometimes with these players, and we did it, we meaning everyone, whether it was Chris Bryant, Anthony Rizzo, Javi Baez, when you see these guys all the time, day after day after day, it's a lot easier to kind of nitpick and look at those things and rationalize your way out of committing to anything. But when you look across the game, like, how many good two-way catchers exist? I mean, there's a handful, maybe? Can you count them on one hand? I mean, like, this is a really rare talent the Cubs have, and, you know, I'm with you guys. I think it wouldn't be a bad outcome, strangely, if he does come back as this kind of hybrid, versatile player, and they'll give themselves this, you know, it'll probably be a wider path to the postseason next year than they gave themselves this year, but it still will be somewhat narrow. And we do this dance again with Wilson next year. Should he take the qualifying offer, or they take a step back here and try and work on that long-term deal, taking all these factors into account? And that certainly wasn't what they planned when they woke up on August 2nd, but here we are, and they're going to have to adapt.
Yeah, it would be funny to know at what point in that process as everything was meshing together, because we know there was some relationship between what was happening with the Padres and Soto and the Mets and the bullpen moves and the Red Sox making decisions, yay or nay. You just wonder at what point the Cubs front office knew, we're not going to be able to do our best laid plans. And they too are probably running through all of these scenarios that we're talking about now. And so, you know, for now, it just behooves everyone that Wilson Contreras feels better, feels more settled. He certainly looked happy and strong in St. Louis. Let's talk a bit about the deals the Cubs did make. So they dealt from the bullpen, as expected, maybe one more guy than was expected. Scott F. Ross going to the Yankees for Hayden Wesneski, a true starting pitching prospect. A deal that didn't see coming, but in hindsight, makes a lot of sense, because if the Cubs believe they can help generate players like Efros, but are lacking in true upper-level starting pitching prospects with upside, well, you make that switch. And then, obviously, Chris Martin, Michael Givens, and David Robertson each going out. Zach McKinstry coming in for the Cubs on Martin. We talked about him in the last episode. But Robertson going to the Phillies for Ben Brown, really nice breakout pitching prospect, a lot like Wesneski, big, hard-throwing, two fastballs, hard slider, bit of a type the Cubs have been trying to accumulate. And then Saul Gonzalez, a relief prospect for Michael Givens. Any thoughts, comments on the Cubs' moves, especially in tandem with a draft that saw them, you know, take 17 pitchers and three position players?
Yeah, a few thoughts. I mean, reports I'm getting on both the pitchers, on Brown and Wesneski, are pretty good, you know, and I know the Cubs really like both of them. Wesneski, I think I like the fact that he's at AAA. He's going to be in the rotation soon, or competing for the rotation soon, right? Small chance we see him this year in the big leagues. Maybe he gets up and he needs to be added to the 40-man anyways in the offseason. So perhaps we see him. Perhaps we see Killian again. We'll see what the final 2 months hold there. But they see him as a rotation piece on a winning team, not the front of the rotation. But he's another depth piece. These players that they just didn't have for years, and now they finally have some in Steele and Keegan, and they're acquiring them via trade. They're drafting them. Hopefully they can continue to develop them, and you're not spending money on Jason Hamill and Tyler Chatwood. You can use the free agent market to get the stars if you're not developing those guys, but you really don't want to be using the free agent market for middle rotation guys, back end rotation guys, if you don't have to. And then Ben Brown, it sounds like someone that the Cubs, along with many teams, kind of went, you know, really aggressive with scouting once scouting opened up again once the pandemic hit and scouting was shut down, right? Once it opened up again and scouts were allowed back in the park, they went super aggressive with minor leaguers in spring training. And Brown was, they watched hundreds of guys, right? And Brown was one of like five where they were like, if we can find a way to get this guy, let's get this guy. He's in the midst of breaking out, and they feel like he's still breaking out. Like he's not done. And you said they have a type. They do, because those are the types of things that they feel they can add to, like that power fastball, that power slider. They feel they can add a bit of touch. They can add like the pitch that kind of complements those pitches. I thought it was interesting. I asked Carter Hawkins yesterday who came from a very good Cleveland organization that has done a brilliant job developing pitching over the years. Asked him what he thought about the pitching development, and then if anything stands out about what they do well. And he said there's kind of, if you want to break it down very simply, there's two things you can do in pitching development, right? How the ball moves after it comes out of your hand and how the body moves. Those are the things you can kind of work on. There, he says, they're great. This group right now is really good at how the ball moves after it comes out of the hand. Really improving that and doing work on that. And I think that's interesting when you talk about the pitchers that they have been targeting, both draft and in trades, because if they can add something to all of these guys, each of these guys, that then you just you're finally talking about a system that's developing pitching and really adding to the rotation through their system instead of just spending all this money and then ending up in the situations they were in 18 and 19 and even 20.
I mean, this to me sets up what we'd already been talking about, the idea of they need a number one type starter, and it's not going to be Joe Musgrove because he signed his extension. And maybe I'm reaching too much here, but I did wonder if the comp pick you'd get with Wilson signing elsewhere would help you stomach the draft pick you'd have to give up and the bonus pool money to sign someone like Carlos Rodon, right? I mean,
or Jacob DeGrom.
Or Jacob. Why not? You know, I mean,
or both.
Yeah. I mean, why stop there? And then maybe trade all these guys you've acquired for 1 year of Ohtani, and then you're all set.
You're getting bread all hot.
I don't know if I can finish this podcast, guys. Oh God.
But I will give a shout out to our colleague Tim Britton, who wrote about the Mets as we're kind of, you know, looking back on the deadline here. He led with Theo Epstein's, you know, line of "If not now, when?" And you know, the Mets GM Billy Epler kind of looking at it and giving, you know, the New York media a math lesson on, you know, taking out, you know, one percentage point, adding one percentage point this year would take away one percentage point each year after that. And as Tim wrote, you know, he said, you'll pay more for an umbrella if it's raining right now. I mean, context matters. And if you have DeGrom healthy, if you have Scherzer healthy, if your team as a whole has been healthy, how can you not do more? And obviously Wilson is the one we've all talked about here, and it's still, you know, I get why Jed thought they'd blink. You know, they did the year before. They have all these factors lining up, and catcher is just one of those positions, like, all it takes is one foul tip and, like, you know, Scherzer's catcher's gone, then what are you gonna do? You know, and to me, when you're a team in New York set up like that with, you know, this great manager who has, what, not won the World Series but gets the team right there, like, give them that piece and go try to win in New York. It was just, you know, if it was stunning to us, I can only imagine how Jed felt like when he, you know, put his laptop down or put his phone down at the end of the night and being like, really, Mets? Like, really?
You know, quick thing, if we're like, I, these quotes from the team presidents and talking about, 1% this and 1% in the future, you take away from the future. Friedman is the best at building teams, right? And now he's with a team in the Dodgers who he knows how to build a team with money or without money. He's showing us that. And his point, I think it was at last deadline, was essentially, I wish I had the exact quote, but the basic premise was, yeah, you overpay at times like this. And guess what? That's how you win a World Series. It's worth it. It's worth it to overpay right now to get that ring. That's the basic premise of what he says. He said it much better than I'm saying it right now, but that's the point. Yes, Theo said, if not now, when? His point is, yeah, I'm going to overpay for this because I want a ring. I want to win a ring. So go do that. Go overpay. Let other fans or media members stress out about the prospect capital you may have lost and cry about Gleyber Torres in 2018. You have that 2016 ring. And I agree, the Mets missed an opportunity, and it has nothing to do with just the Cubs. It just has to do with the Mets missing an opportunity there. And I think that's that. If you're a fan of that team, that has to be frustrating when you know the situation they're in.
God, I hope they flame out in the first round. All right, we'll leave it there. Everybody listening to this hates the Mets, so that's just a beautiful place to end it. This is On to Waveland. It's the Cubs podcast here at The Athletic. I am Brett Taylor. You can catch my stuff at Bleacher Nation. That's Sahadev Sharma and Patrick Mooney. Theirs, of course, is at The Athletic. We hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and we'll be back at you next week to talk. You know, we're going to have to transition back to a little more like on-field baseball stuff. It is not inaccurate to say the Cubs still have quite a bit of evaluation to do the rest of the way. So there actually is some substantial meaning the rest of the way for the Cubs, even though we're past the deadline, they're not competitive, yada, yada. But I actually do like this time of year. So I'll be into talking about all that good stuff.
You're pumped for more Nick Madrigal at-bats, aren't you?
why you got to end like that? Why you got to, you know?
Sorry.
I would not.
He's already hurting from the Hosmer trade possibility evaporating right in front of his eyes. You know, he had his Hosmer Cubs jersey ready to go in the cart.
It's Padres prospect jersey. That was on the back.
It's like kicking him when he's down, Sade. Come on.
No, I mean, I think all I would say to that is it is probably useful for the Cubs to get a lot of at-bats for Nick Madrigal the rest of the way and have some additional information. I think it would have been fine if he were still at Iowa getting those at-bats and getting settled in, but we'll let the Cubs do as they will. And we'll talk about it next week after he is on a 6 or 7 game hitting streak without question. So you all take care and goodbye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.